This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, May 16th, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. There is a growing shortage of medical practitioners to provide care for the United States, which we should note is an aging country, and the medical profession itself is moving too slowly to address it. Cato's Jeff Singer suggests that more states ought to be more like Missouri and a few others and allow so-called assistant physicians to have a more prominent role. Singer explains how it works. Let's start with a bit of taxonomy here. Assistant physician, not the same thing as physician's assistant.
Correct. Assistant physician is a category or a term that was developed a few years ago by people in the policy world. Some people also refer to it as associate physician. And basically, it's an apprentice physician. Up until the early 20th century, the most common way to prepare doctors for medical practice after they graduate medical school is they'd be an apprentice with a practicing physician for a while, and then they'd go out on their own when they were felt ready. What's been going on now is, as more and more people are becoming aware, there's a growing shortage of healthcare practitioners to provide primary care services to a growing and aging population in this country. And we're talking about all kinds of primary healthcare providers, from physician assistants to nurse practitioners to medical doctors. And evidence is that a large number of them are actually retiring, and there are not enough being produced to meet the needs of a growing population. When it comes to producing doctors, the way our system has evolved, there are now not enough residency slots to fill all of the graduating medical physicians. So a certain amount of graduating medical doctors are left without any residency position to get into. Oh, every single state requires, in order to be licensed to practice as a physician, they require that a physician has completed at least 1 year of a residency program. Some states require more than that, but the majority require at least 1 year. Residency programs average between 3 and 5 years in length, depending on the specialty that you're going into a program in. And in most states, after you've completed that first year, you can then take part three of the standardized national medical licensing exam. You have to pass parts one and two prior to graduating from med school. And then in most states, after you've passed part three and taken 1 year, you're given a license to practice as what people refer to as a GP or general practitioner. A general practitioner is a doctor that's not specialized in anything in particular, and almost all of them engage in primary care, which is, you know, everyday bread and butter things like preventative health care, vaccinations, routine stitching of lacerations, and actually providing for the common medical problems like high blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera. And then if general practitioners get a case that's a little more complicated and is best seen by a specialist, they'll refer to a specialist. So that's the way the regime has been. But because of the fact that there are not enough residency positions to match with the amount of doctors coming out, anywhere from 7 to 10% of graduating medical students each year find themselves stuck where they haven't gotten into a residency program. So now here they are owing hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical school debt, and they can't further their education in a residency program, and they can't make a living. So, and the way the system is set up, they have what's called a matching program where you, when you're in your senior year of medical school, you apply to match with a residency program. And it's a once a year thing. It's just like open enrollment would be, for example, with Medicare. So if you don't match, you basically have to wait till next year. So an idea was proposed about 5 or 6 years ago kind of going back to the apprentice model for the doctors who find themselves in that situation. And the term assistant physician or associate physician was proposed. The state of Missouri was the first state to actually do this. They have a large underserved rural population. And in, starting in 2017, doctors who found themselves in that situation where they graduated medical school, they passed the first two parts of the licensing exam, and they couldn't get into a residency program, were able to go as sort of an apprentice. They have to have a collaborating agreement with a licensed physician so that that person's always available if there's any questions or issues, things that need to be discussed. And that actually collaborating doctor takes responsibility for any issues that may arise. And then they could see patients. So here, when you're having a not enough healthcare practitioners available to meet the needs of the population, here's somebody you could put to work. And at the same time, they're furthering their education and honing their skills.
Who's against this?
Well,
I have thoughts.
Well, generally entrenched incumbents have an issue with this. You'll hear arguments from, for example, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and even from the American Medical Association, saying, "Well, you know, you don't want to, maybe let them do that for 1 year, but not any more than that, because." You don't know how good a care a person with that level of experience can be giving. Now, I respond to that by saying, well, what's the difference between that and a person in a residency program? When you graduate medical school, you are now working in a residency program under the supervision of licensed professors or attendings, as we call them. They're not like staying with you side by side all day long. They check in with you periodically and they're available. And they have to approve sometimes major decisions that you have to make. In my case, because I was a surgical resident. So when I was a resident, I couldn't, if I decided a patient needed an operation, I had to run that by my attending and make sure the attending approved of that. And then I would do the operation, not always with the attending present, depending on the degree of complexity. There's no difference. I was an apprentice by another name. So because of resistance by some entrenched incumbents, different states that have passed this law, there are about 6 or 7 states now, and others in the pipeline, they vary in terms of the restrictions. The most liberal state is Missouri. In Missouri, you can renew that assistant physician category of license. And you're a doctor, but you're a doctor practicing under the provisional license of assistant physician. You can renew that annually indefinitely. So if you decide you like that arrangement, there's nothing that stops you from doing that indefinitely. In most other states, they allow you to renew it either once or twice. And some states, like it was recently passed into law in Idaho, they only allow 1 year. At the end of the year, if you haven't found another residency spot, you're out of luck, tough luck. We gave you 1 year to help you bide your time. There are people, and I'm among them, who believe that actually this can and should provide an alternative pathway to full medical licensure, unrestricted licensure. For example, as I mentioned earlier about general practitioners, if 1 year of residency, and that's in any kind of residency, if 1 year of residency can, plus passing Part 3 of the medical licensing exam, qualifies you in the eyes of most states to be licensed as a GP, then why wouldn't, let's say, 3 or maybe 4 years of an assistant physicianship working under the supervision of a specialist in family medicine, plus passing Part 3 of the U.S. medical license exam, also qualify you to be a GP? And I remember in my day, so I've been around a long time, so when I was in my residency, and this was in the 70s, the specialty of emergency medicine was in its infancy. So most doctors who worked in emergency rooms were not emergency specialists. They were doctors. They could have been family doctors or surgeons or whatever. And residency programs paid very little. I completed my first year of my 5-year program in general surgery. That qualified me. I took Part 3 of the exam, and I got a license in Arizona as a GP, which allowed me to moonlight in the emergency room to make some extra money because I had a little baby in the house and, you know, we had a growing family. And I did that for the next few years when I had some free time until finally after my fifth year of my surgical residency, I graduated the program and then took my specialty boards and became board certified as a general surgeon. And of course, I never had a reason to do that again. But here, I'm an example of how, you know, you could, if I was able to do that, then why wouldn't a person who's been working under the supervision of a, you know, a board certified family physician in a clinic for 3 years and passing part three exam, why wouldn't that be just as good? There's resistance, of course, because that would upset the regime that's in place right now, where all the states kind of have this pretty standardized way of controlling the pipeline of healthcare practitioners into the workforce. And if there's an alternative pathway, I think some people see that as a threat to their controlling the flow.
Well, let's talk about the current regime, because the current regime is far from perfect. People have to wait many months for even routine care. People have to, in some areas, have to drive many, many miles to access physician services. So I guess, what is the defense offered by the people, the primary beneficiaries of the current regime to the system that we have now?
Yeah, in fact, the national average wait time to see a primary care practitioner is 26 days now in the United States, and it's going to get worse. The people who are opposed to it are almost all, like I say, people in the medical profession or in the licensing board field who say they're concerned about patient safety. Ironically, you never hear any patients or patient advocacy groups express that concern. And in the states where this law has been passed, they require that the assistant physician make it known to the patient that he or she is an assistant physician. They're still referred to as doctor because they have a medical degree, so they should be called doctor. But they need to make the patient aware that they're in an apprentice role, which is no different than when you're seen in a hospital and the resident pays you a visit. And that resident will be Dr. So-and-so. And the resident is supposed to let you know, I'm the first year resident for, you know, taking care of you. So the patients don't seem to raise objections. It's only the medical professionals that do.
Well, what then do they raise as an alternative to liberalizing access to care from MDs under these proposals?
It's a different subject, but over the years, most of the residency programs have become dependent on money from the federal government. In the early days, most residency programs had their own sources of funding. They would pay the salaries of the residents. And of course, it was a symbiotic relationship. You know, the residents are providing work and they're providing training. But starting with the Medicare program, Medicare started having a portion of the Medicare funds went towards funding residency slots. And over the years, the residency programs have become so dependent upon it that if they don't get federal funding for residency slots, they usually just don't open residency slots. And those slots have been capped for several years now. So the medical profession, the organized medicine, like the American Medical Association, are saying, we want the government to allot more taxpayer dollars to fund more residency slots. That's their answer.
You mentioned the few handful of states that have this. Other states are moving ahead with this kind of reform. What has changed the minds of lawmakers in those states, and what are those states?
They tend to be states with significant rural and underserved populations. The first one, like I say, was Missouri. Since that time, Arizona, Arkansas, Kansas, Utah, Louisiana, and most recently Idaho, and as we're making this, recording this broadcast, this Tennessee legislature just approved an associate or assistant physician bill, and it's awaiting the governor's signature. And there's also a bill under consideration in the Alabama legislature. So, but almost all of the states involved have a real problem with underserved communities, particularly in rural areas, but increasingly, we're seeing this in all areas, rural and urban. But that's been the governing factor. And in the different states have different terms. Like I say, Missouri calls them assistant physicians. But some states call them associate physicians. Tennessee, they're going to be calling them graduate physicians. In Louisiana and Idaho, they call them bridge physicians because it's seen as a bridge until they get their next opportunity to get into a residency program. But it's the same concept, regardless of the term used.
You said Missouri was the most liberal state with respect to its policies on this. Why have other states not adopted that model specifically?
Resistance from the organized medical groups, like I say, representing the family medicine, primary care, or the state medical association have persuaded legislators to put more restrictions on the bill so that in many states you're allowed only 1 or 2 years to be an assistant physician, after which you've had your chance and now you got to. You're no longer able to do so. Missouri, on the other hand, has no limits on it. In Missouri, the legislator who brought this onto the floor and really worked hard to get it passed is still practicing as an orthopedic surgeon in the state. He's no longer in the legislature, but he's perhaps his relationship and the fact that he's a doctor and a legislator had a lot to do with the success in Missouri in making it a more liberal law. It always helps. In some of the states where this has been proposed, it's also proposed, for example, in Texas. In some of the states where it's proposed, by the legislator bringing it up for consideration happens to also be a physician, and that helps.
Jeff Singer is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.